Congressman Bobby Scott.
Hello, Richmond, Virginia. Are we going to win next week? Who are we going to vote for? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we have some exciting guests with us today. I wrote these little remarks about a couple of weeks ago, and I knew that Mark Warner was going to be here. And I said that we may have on the stage the next president of the United States. But Mark decided not to run. But let me tell you something. We've got Barack Obama here today. And we still might have the next president of the United States with us today. Let me tell you, for the last 6 years, people have been talking about staying the course. But you know that we need to do what? Change the course. We talked a budget surplus and made it into a deficit, and they keep talking about stay the course. What do we need to do? Change the course. And on the war in Iraq, Jim Webb and I told you to begin with, we shouldn't have even started the course. And they want to stay the course, but what do we need to do in Iraq? Change the course. And when it came time for the environment and civil rights and all the backtracking we've been doing, what do we need to do? And when it comes time to health insurance, there are more people uninsured, there are more people in poverty, what do we need to do? And when it comes time to Katrina and Abramoff and Mark Foley and everything they're doing in Washington, what do we need to do? And who can change the course?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Richmond Mayor Doug Wilder.
Hello. Wow, wow. This is fantastic. This is the kind of welcome we want to give to the people who've come to make certain that we make changes in Washington. You know, it doesn't depend on how much money you have. It doesn't depend on how many endorsements you may have. It depends on what's in your heart and what's in your spirit. I can speak a little bit from experience. They said when you got behind me that you were crazy. They knew I was crazy to run. They said when we got behind Mark Warner, who was Mark Warner? You found out and they found out. They said when we got behind Tim Kaine, well, he doesn't have a chance. He's the governor today. And some people say, who is Jim Webb? Jim Webb is the next United States Senator from Virginia. And don't you know it? Now, enough is enough. We're not talking about just the war in Iraq. That's enough to talk about. But we are talking about that $4 billion a week that's spent there. We're talking about the corruption and the graft and the sleaze that's in Washington. We're talking about the lack of courage and strength that has existed for far too long to say to the president, you have been wrong too long. And we're going to make it right. Now, many of you know how I feel about polls. I'm going to tell you, the only poll that is important or means anything is the one that's taken on election day. Don't let us down. When I say us, who am I talking about? These youngsters. I'm talking about the unborn. I'm talking about generations who are already saddled with debt. I'm talking about those people who are not the 1% of the rich in this country. I'm talking about those who want fairness and equity and will have it. And I am committing myself to making certain that we do everything we can to elect Jim Webb as the next United States Senator, and with you, you do it. God bless you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Governor Mark Warner. Hello, Richmond. Hello, Virginia Union. A special hello to all the students from Union. I was proud to have served on the board of this great institution. Go Panthers! It's 5 days before, again, in Virginia, we make history. And as you've heard from Congressman Scott and Mayor Wilder, the stakes couldn't be higher. Think about it. Think about a time in our history when we have faced so many problems of enormous magnitude all at the same time. When the world desperately needs American leadership, our standing in the world because of this president and this Congress has never been lower. We're engaged in a war in Iraq that this president and this senator says stay the course when even our own intelligence agencies say we're creating more terrorists than we're capturing or killing. We have an administration in Washington and a senator that marches lockstep that doesn't understand that we've got to connect the dots between energy policy, global warming, national security, and American jobs. Look at our current policy. Our current policy is let's go borrow money from China to buy oil from countries around the world that don't like us. It's 2006. And our great country has no national competitiveness strategy. Right. We don't have a plan the way we have in Virginia to link education, to make sure we control health care costs, for America to be the leader in innovation. Of course, to be a leader in innovation, that would require an administration that actually believed in science. What are these people thinking? And then we have fiscal policies. We have fiscal policies that are leaving these young people. Stop being Democrats and Republicans for a moment. Just be Americans. We ought to be embarrassed. We ought to be embarrassed in terms of deficits, low saving rates, trade imbalances. And we have a United States Senator that votes 97% of the time with this president and this administration. Are you ready for a change? It all starts here in Virginia. We made history with Bobby Scott and Doug Wilder. And as Governor Wilder said 5 years ago, they said, Democrat can't win again in Virginia. But because what we did together, we elected a Democrat, somebody I know a little bit about, in 2001 as governor. Last year at this time, they said, well, Warner, maybe you got your way through, but there's no way there's going to be another Democratic governor. Well, who's our governor? Tim Kaine. 10 months ago, they said, well, this is going to be a cakewalk.
for the incumbent senator. Matter of fact, I might have seen him once or twice in Iowa and New Hampshire. Well, right now, the polls show Jim Wedd is ahead in this race for the United States Senate. Because he not only talks the talk, he walks the walk. He served our nation in Vietnam. He served as a Navy secretary. When he's elected to the United States Senate, he'll be the only member of the Senate that actually has one of his children, his son, serving on the front lines in Iraq. But we got to do our part. It's down those last 4 or 5 days, calling and hauling. And the person that I want to bring out now is someone who I have known as a friend for over 25 years. We both went to law school together. He became a lawyer, I became the client. And yes, I'm going to go ahead and say it as I always do. I see that phone right there. When I'm speaking, it's okay. Leave your cell phones on. This man has served us as mayor, he has served us as lieutenant governor, and he is serving us now as a great governor. Please join me in welcoming, I get to say it about him now, His Excellency, the 70th governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, my friend Tim Kaine. Virginia Union! Yeah! Woo! This is great! Hello, Richmond! Who's ready to change Virginia? Who's ready to change America? That's right, what a great day to be here with such good friends. I can feel the energy all across this Commonwealth, and it's great to be with you, so many friends and neighbors, and to be with this great crowd. This is like... The dream team. This is like the dream team and American Idol and all that all rolled up into one up here. My great friend Mark Warner, who introduced, we've known each other for 25 years. When I was lieutenant governor, I knew Mark Warner before I met my wife, and when I was lieutenant governor, I spent more time with him than I spent with my wife. And he has done a spectacular job making us so proud. Give Mark Warner a round of applause. Yeah. And our mayor, we are in a two-person club. People who have been mayor of Richmond and governor of Virginia, not necessarily in that order, but we are in a two-person club. Give him a big round of applause, Mayor Wilder. Our congressman in the third, Bobby Scott, he's heard me say this. He's heard me say this. When they did redistricting in 2000, they put my wife Ann and I in the last block at the very edge of the 3rd District, and every morning we woke up, looked across the street, and said, "You sorry sons of guns over on the other side of the street." Because we've got a great congressman, Bobby Scott. Give him a round of applause. And then some of Richmond, as you know, is in the 7th Congressional District. And I want to introduce a great friend, Jim Nachman, who's running for Congress in the 7th District. Jim Nachman. This is an exciting time. It's a time about fundamental change, about big issues in this country at home and abroad. There hasn't been a time of such fundamental issues in my 48 years on the planet. And I was thinking about all the big issues... all the big issues and all the people that this affects. But you know, it's not really so much about big issues. And in fact, this race isn't even about our spectacular, spectacular candidate who is going to be the next senator from the Commonwealth of Virginia, Jim Webb. Give Jim a round of applause. But you know, this election isn't even about Jim Webb. I'm going to tell you what this election's about. It's about Jimmy Webb. It's about Jimmy Webb, who's 24 years old and who's a Marine fighting for the country right now in Ramadi, Iraq. And it's about all the other thousands of Jimmy Webbs who were in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's about all of you here at Virginia Union and the high school students from Maggie Walker. Yeah, all right. That's what this election is about. It's not even mostly about Jim Webb. It's about the young people of this country. Will the young people of this country be able to be in a society where people have health care in the richest nation of the world? That's what this election is about. Will our youngsters fighting overseas and at Virginia Union and at Maggie Walker live in a society where we treat workers fairly and pay them fair wages? That's what this election is about. This election is about, will the Jimmy Webbs in this country, those folks fighting for the country who are sacrificing, will they have leaders who are worthy of their sacrifice, who will have a plan and have an idea and be able to carry out? That's what this election is about. And the question for us is, are we ready to make fundamental change? I want to bring before you, are you ready to make a change? Are you ready to make a change? Well, I want to bring before you a man who is crisscrossing this nation, who is leading change in his state of Illinois, in the United States, in the United States Senate. Somebody we are so proud of, because he is in the vineyard. He's got the oars in his hand, working with all of us so that we can change this nation for the good. Let me bring up the spectacular senator from the state of Illinois, one of our best leaders, Senator Barack Obama.
Virginia. I am fired up. Look at this crowd. Seems like we got a crowd every time we come to Richmond. Every time we come to Richmond. And it's always a nice day, too. How many folks last rally we had to get Tim Kaine elected? You remember that? It was a pretty day like this. It felt the same. Folks had smiles on their faces. We knew it was going to happen. And that's how we're feeling today. We know what's going to happen. I want to thank, first of all, I never know what to call him, the governor, the mayor, the leader. He got so many titles. But we appreciate Douglas Wilder letting us into town today. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. We appreciate the just barely out of office governor, who did so much to change the political landscape, not just in Virginia, but all across the country, because he exemplifies the kind of common sense, practical, hardworking, diligent, intelligent style of leadership that we need all throughout America. We appreciate Mark Warner for the great work that he's done. We love our new governor here in Virginia, Tim Kaine. He's just a righteous man. The only person we love more than him is his wife, who's right over there. The real star of the family, but that's okay. Who is going to continue on the path that Mark was able to set and Doug before him, making sure that Virginia is moving into the 21st century with strength and vision. And then we need a little help in Congress. We already got Bobby Scott. He does an outstanding job on behalf of this district and on behalf of so many who need a voice in Congress. But Jim, you know, Bobby needs a little bit of help. Yeah, we're a little frustrated by the current direction in Washington, and so it might make sense for us to get Jim Nachman in there to help out a little bit. So. Well, listen, I've seen some of you before, and I've now been traveling all around the country for the last several weeks, and I've told this story about the first time that I ever ran for office. People typically had two questions for me. I was a community organizer, had never run for office, law professor, and the Senate seat that I occupied opened up. So I did what every wise man does when somebody asked me if I was willing to run. I prayed on it. Amen. Amen. And then I asked my wife. Amen. And so after consulting those two higher powers, I did what every first-time candidate does, which is basically talk to anybody who will listen to you. And I went to beauty shops and barber shops and bake sales and PTA meetings. Two guys standing on a corner, I'd rush up and start handing them literature. Everywhere I went, I'd get the same two questions. First question, where'd you get that funny name Barack Obama? Although people would mispronounce it, they would call me Alabama, or they'd call me Yo Mama, and I'd explain, no, it's Obama. Then my father was from Kenya, from Africa, and I know there aren't that many Kenyans here today. My mother was from Kansas, which is where I got my accent from. All right, we got one Kansan right here. But the second question that bears on today, particularly because we're Virginia Union, we got a lot of young people here, the second question comes to mind. And that is, people would say, you know, you seem like a nice young man. You've got fine resume and, you know, teach at a fancy law school. You've done work in the community, beautiful family, church-going man. But why would you want to go into dirty, nasty business like politics? Why would you want to do that? And the question is understandable because all of us at some level feel cynical about the political process. And that cynicism feeds on itself. We have a sense that politics has become a business instead of mission. And the power is always trumping principle. And that we've got sometimes some leaders who are long on rhetoric but short on follow-through. And so we get discouraged sometimes. And we have a sense that maybe we shouldn't even bother. Maybe every 2 years, 4 years, we might vote for what we consider to be the lesser of two evils, but we don't have confidence that government will make a difference in our lives. At most, we hope it does us no harm. But I've been traveling around the country over the last several months, and I'm reminded that there has always been another tradition of politics, based on a very simple idea that we've got obligations towards each other, and that we've got obligations towards this country, and that we are proud of our individualism, and we are proud of our self-reliance, and we're proud of doing on our own, but we also have this tradition that says that if we work together, then we rise together, and if we are divided, then we fall. And that idea has carried us forward throughout this country's history. There's been an audaciousness, a boldness about our willingness to say that together we can perfect this union. So you start off with 13 raggedy colonies and think that somehow they can defeat the most powerful naval power on earth. And yet they decide we're just going to form this union. And somehow the greatest nation on earth will unfurl across a continent. And then they have the boldness to say, we're going to start a new form of government. We actually believe that people can govern themselves. Nobody had ever imagined that might be possible. And yet somehow those states came together and helped to form this union. And then the union itself was stained with the original sin of slavery. And yet somehow, because of abolitionists and because of the Civil War and because of people who were willing to march and go to jail and bloody themselves, because of all that, somehow we were able to bring more and more people into the political community that we call the United States of America. And each every generation, you had immigrants coming from distant shores, knowing not what to expect, but understanding that they wanted to believe in a better life for their children and their grandchildren. And somehow the country was able to absorb them. And then we realized that we love business in America. America's business is business, and we believe in entrepreneurship. We believe in people making money, but we also notice sometimes workers aren't getting their fair shake. And so we thought, well, maybe we should strengthen the ability of workers to organize so they can get a minimum wage and they can get a decent vacation and they can get basic benefits like health care and pensions. And so throughout this process, there always have been those who imagine, despite the cynicism, despite the world as it is, they imagine the world as it might be. And they think to themselves, you know what, if we come together, if we recognize we've got a stake in each other, that somehow we can create a country that is even better than the one we inherited.
Yeah.
And that spirit is what this campaign and this election is about right now.
Right.
Because over the last 10 years, we've been suffering under a politics that feeds on cynicism, that encourages cynicism, that encourages division. But here's the good news. As I travel around the country, Virginia, people are looking for a different message. You know, because they look around and they say, how is it we spend more money on healthcare than any nation on earth? And yet we still have 46 million uninsured. And we've got families who are seeing their co-payments and deductibles and premiums going up. And we're seeing small business owners unable to afford health insurance for themselves, much less for their workers. And we see large businesses who can't compete internationally because of the strains of healthcare. So they say, why can't we solve that problem? In a non-ideological way, in a practical way, in a bipartisan way, in a common sense way, why can't we move forward and initiate the kind of healthcare plan that would make sure that all our children are getting decent treatment for asthma and diabetes instead of ending up in the emergency room? So we can save money and we can end up doing better not only for those individuals, but for the entire country. And then they take a look at education. They say, we know we've got to compete against countries that are catching up. And we've got to make sure that in the face of globalization, our young people are trained in math and science. And they have to have access to a college education, so they don't understand why Congress would actually increase the interest rates on student loans precisely at a time when young people need student loans. They don't understand that. And they don't understand why we don't have an energy policy. Because they know that, yes, gas prices have gone down a little bit right before the election, but they expect that they might just go back up after the election. And more than that, they say, why would we send $800 million a day to some of the most hostile nations on earth? Why would we fund both sides on the war on terrorism? Why wouldn't we harness alternative fuels and solar power and wind power and let our farmers grow biodiesel and put them in American-made cars so we can not only deal with our national security problem but also our environment? Why wouldn't we do that? And most of all, they say, why have we spent $350 billion in Iraq? And why have we lost thousands of our most precious young men and women who are willing to give their final measure of devotion? And yet we find ourselves less safe. And why is it that the war on terrorism seems only to be fought between September and November every even number year? Because we thought we're all in this together. We should be focusing on terrorism and homeland security and a strategy to make sure we're respected and not just feared around the world. We should be doing that each and every day. And yet we haven't been doing it. And so finally people have said, the American people are in a serious mood now. They're in a sober mood. You know, and that's a good thing, because here's the thing about the American people. When they pay attention, good things happen. Because at their core, the American people are a decent people. They get confused sometimes. Sometimes they're listening to Rush Limbaugh, or, you know, they get distracted. Mainly they're just busy and they're tired and they're not paying attention because they're looking after their families and getting the kids to school and working hard. They're doing the things that all of us have to do to make sure that we're advancing in this world. But every once in a while, they start paying attention. And when they start paying attention, the folks in power right now are in trouble. Because they say, we've had enough of the do-nothing, can't-do, won't-even-try style of government. They say, we want to try something different. They believe, in a very modest way, that government can make a difference in terms of making sure that every single person who wants to find a job can find a job that pays a living wage. and that nobody should be bankrupt when they get sick, and that every child should have access to a good education, and they should be able to go to college even if their parents aren't rich, and every senior citizen should be able to retire with dignity and respect, and that we as a country should not just be acting tough and talking tough and acting dumb. We should be actually tough and smart when it comes to our foreign policy. And in that mood, people are looking for the kind of candidates, who are going to deliver on that message of hope. The kind of candidates who believe in a common sense, practical, decent kind of government, an honest, principled kind of leadership. And you in Virginia have somebody right here who can be elected to the United States Senate. If in the next few days everybody here makes the effort. You know, Dr. King once said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And that's where we want to go. We want to move it in the direction of justice and fairness. But it doesn't move on its own that way. It moves because each and every one of us pull that arc in the direction of justice. And you've got an opportunity in this election to make that difference. For a candidate who has fought for this country, who has led this country, somebody who has the kind of bearing and the kind of principles and has been working like a dog to make sure that he can put his shoulder behind the wheel and help bend this country in the direction of justice. He needs your help. He needs people to volunteer. He needs people to make phone calls. He needs people to do whatever it takes, knocking on doors, dragging those cousins and uncles who don't vote to the polls. If you guys do that, then I'm absolutely confident that Virginia is going to be proud to welcome the next best senator from the great state of Illinois. Give it up for the next United States... I'm the guy from Illinois. The guy from Virginia. Give it up for Jim Warren. Give it up.